Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, I'm Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen, and today's guest is Chad Nesbitt from the Nesbitt Agencies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chad. In a previous podcast, we talked about startup companies and the basic insurance coverage that they need once they've identified an entity and talked to their lawyer and their CPA. The next stop is your office.
We hope so.
And we talked about how important that was. But today we're going to talk about a maturing company. Now it's 5 years down the road and the company's doing $5 or $10 million in sales and things have changed and everything's happened. And there's some different concerns for those type of companies. And hopefully they've had an annual checkup with you. But where do we start with that? As your business starts maturing and starts growing, what changes with their exposures and their coverage?
Well, in the first one that we talked about, in the growing of a small business, we talked about the initial concerns and sales and maybe adding employees and maybe growing into a new location. Now you're 5 years down the road and things have gone well, so you probably have that facility. You've brought employees. You may have a fleet of vehicles. So you've got a whole new set of needs that you need to be addressing. And there's other things that you need to start paying attention to that can help you control your costs as you grow, because insurance, as you know, becomes a big bottom line expense, mm-hmm. especially your workers' compensation, your auto, that's something else that you need to pay attention to, and your employees. I mean, all of those things, you can help control those costs, and that's where we're at when you're a mature company. You've got the insurance. Most things are in place. You may have to take a look at tweaking some coverages, which we can get into down the road, but right now, you want to take a look at how can I control my expenses.
Well, let's start with the facility. We've talked to the business lawyer, and we've talked to the CPAs. A lot of times, the business gets to a point where they're going to buy their real estate. They're going to form an LLC for the real estate, and then they're going to lease it to their operating company. Now, when they've done that, now you've got insurance issues in the LLC on the real estate, and then you've probably got some insurance issues for the operating company as the tenant in the real estate. Is that right?
That's correct. And a way to address this, and this does happen quite a bit, and the easiest way to address it is when you take out the policy, as long as you have more than 50% ownership in both entities, you can name both of them on the policy. So if it's Chad Nesbitt LLC, and I am the owner of the building, and I am leasing it back to the Nesbitt Agencies, I, as the landlord, can have a contract back with myself, and then I can name myself on that policy. Picking it up. So there's a way that you don't have to take dual policies out for the same exposure.
So that's called additional named insured?
Correct, an additional named insured. And you want to make sure that you're actually listed appropriately on the policy. If you're not listed on the policy, then there is a question as to whether or not you are listed formally as an additional named insured. Sometimes you'll see what's called a certificate of insurance that is issued out. A certificate of insurance is just a simple snapshot. It's a one-page thing that will go out to lenders. And if somebody names you as an additional insured on that policy, you want to make sure that there's a follow-up, that you're actually named. You see your name on the policy.
So then okay. They can own the facility policy in the LLC and name the operating company as additional named insured. But that policy would cover some liability insurance and some fire, theft, those kind of things, damages too?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, now that you have a facility, the things that you need to be aware of is the building. So you're insuring the building to the value appropriate to whatever it's been appraised at. All of the property, the contents inside of it, your computer equipment. You want to take a look at the inventory as far as furniture goes. Take a look at your systems. Anything that can't be attached to the ground, that is your contents. Anything that's physically attached can be considered part of the building.
So then once again, you come in and sit down with the business owner and say, okay, what'd you pay for this building and what's the replacement cost and what are your contents and go through that laundry list again of here's the coverages we can have and here's the amounts?
That's correct. We'd want to do a walkthrough. When we came out there and sat with the client, whether it be the controller, the CEO, the CFO, whomever they want us to help with the business insurance decision, first thing that we're going to do is take a tour of the facility. There are some things that we can point out before loss control comes in to help them maybe save some cost long term if they don't have a sprinkler system. Sometimes it helps by showing them the cost of a sprinkler system versus what you could save in insurance if you don't have one versus putting one in. If you've got maybe some flammables that are too close to a something that could possibly ignite them, getting those moved away. Things like that, you know, helping them pay attention to what those risk needs are in front of them. Those are things to help by preventing the claim and never having the claim is the best way to save yourself an insurance in the long term.
So you and the fire marshal both like those approved cabinets for flammables.
Oh, yeah, we love them. Big fan of sprinkler systems, too.
We had a building some time ago that once a year we asked the fire marshal from the city to walk through just to see if he saw anything that we could do better. And he wrote up a report for us, and we sent that to our insurance agency, and they filed it with the insurance company, and they said that was a big help. Is that something you recommend?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is having a, you know, if you're in a protection class and your protection class changes, your protection class is based upon the water that you have in the area. Just having somebody come out and taking a look at what's called a flow charge. If you had something, you know, as the suburbs are expanding, you may be in an area that is a higher protection class code, which is going to give you a higher rate. But as the suburbs are expanding and you start to see the city build up around you and hydrants coming to the area, a simple change in a protection class code can save you an enormous amount of money.
So there again, you have an annual inspection of the fire sprinkler system and maybe a quarterly flow test, and you file that information with you as well?
Yeah, it wouldn't have to be quarterly. It's a one-time thing. It's just something by having your agent coming out there and seeing you more than just once a year to slap you on the back and talk a little bit about it. Having them come out there for a quarterly update is certainly they're going to catch something like that. You know, hey, the first time I saw you were out in a field, now you're in a suburb, there's a development around you.
You got sidewalks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh, this is nice. Hey, guess what? We've got some savings here for you.
Okay, so now we've got the facility covered, mm-hmm. and you've got the operating company covered and the LLC covered and so forth. But the business has grown, and you've got delivery people, you've got employees, you've got some substantial revenues, you've got more to protect and more to lose if you have those gaps. Where do we go next? Let's talk about those vehicles. We didn't quite cover that the last time.
Yeah, you had a hot topic last time.
Now, there's a simple part of this, and I think that's your delivery vehicles. If you've got a product or something that you're delivering, you've got delivery trucks and you got drivers and so forth. Is there some loss protection teaching or classes that can help with that too?
Yeah, and the first thing that you want to do, and this is kind of an HR issue too, is that the hiring of an employee. If an employee is going to have access to a vehicle, the first thing that you want to do is establish a company car policy. And in that company car policy, you want that employee to be aware of the fact that you're expecting them to maintain a solid driving record if they're going to be able to have access to a vehicle. Make sure that they're aware that their employment is based upon that, so that in the event that they pick up some tickets or driving violations that can have a negative effect on your insurance, that you can do whatever means are necessary to amend that situation.
What if, though, I have a vehicle and it's not assigned to an employee? Supposing it's, like you were saying, a delivery vehicle and it's used by 20 different people.
Yep. Anybody with access to that vehicle.
Okay.
Anybody with access to that vehicle, you want them to sign off that you're going to be monitoring their motor vehicle report, and the reason why you're doing it is because that it's going to affect your rates. And
so
if you do
that as a condition of employment, then you're not getting in trouble with those people. You want to make sure they have a clean driving record before they have access to that vehicle.
That's exactly part of the hiring process.
Part
is
of
just
the hiring.
To make sure that they're signing off.
And then do you recommend Any drug and alcohol testing of any kind for drivers? I'm talking about delivery people that are driving all the time.
Yeah, that's something you're going to want to take up with your attorney. But yeah, on our end, especially for workers' compensation, if you've got a drug testing program in place, make sure that you're doing it to all parties and they're not being specific. You know, if you implement a program, understand that you're implementing that program for everybody. You can't be specific on it. But yes, we see improved results. Absolutely.
Now, do you have this program? Do you provide this program? I'm thinking about the letters and the things that you do when hiring.
Hiring part of it, we'll work with the HR person. We do have programs in place. That goes through third-party vendors. The drug testing is done through a third-party vendor. We'll help them screen drivers as long as they're signing off that the driver's aware that this is going to happen as a conditional part of their employment. But yeah, we'll work with them on that. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
So if they do the hiring right and they have the random drug testing, does that help save some money on the
premiums? It'll save them a lot of money long term. Statistics have shown time and time again that if you pay attention to the employee when they're coming in and you go through that pre-screening process, that you will have a better employee. Workers' compensation-wise, we found that it saves money on that end. You certainly don't want somebody driving a vehicle that, and we've had this happen before, didn't have a driver's license.
Oh, so that wouldn't be a good thing at all.
Yeah. No. So you don't want to find out the hard way. This is from 18 years of working with individuals where they come to us and say, you know, I never did pull Johnny's driver's license, you know, so he sat through, had it signed. Guess what? Johnny's been without a driver's license for 2 years and you didn't know it.
Oh,
so that's not the time to talk about it. You want to make sure that you're addressing these things up front. Also, you want to make sure that that person knows that you're paying attention. And, you know, everybody's going to get the occasional speed, so it's not like they're going to be dinged and terminated for such reasons. We're looking for kind of the frequency, you know, things that are happening, and making sure that they've got a valid license. You don't want somebody, again, that insurance follows the vehicle. Your business assets are following that vehicle. And if you've got a driver that does not have a license, he's representing you right now. And we've had this happen before. We had an incident that came up where an individual sent somebody down to pick up a car for him. Mm-hmm. Tommy was around, so, and I keep picking on Tommy and Johnny. I apologize to all the Tommy and Johnnies out there. That's I've got nothing against you. sent him down to pick up the vehicle and to bring it back. Tommy went down, picked up the vehicle that was being repaired at a shop, came back, ran a red light, and killed an 80-year-old woman. Now, that vehicle that is following the business assets, they found out that Tommy didn't have a driver's license. Tommy represents the company. The company's getting sued. So things like that, you know, if you just spend a little bit of time and you talk to your employees, and this is something that a business owner needs to take. This is, you know, you're the one that came up with the idea. You're the one that's your blood. It's your sweat. It's your tears.
So you're the one. That isn't a warning.
That is something that you need to pay attention to.
You asked earlier, what's exposure? There's exposure.
There's exposure. Yeah, there's exposure. Absolutely.
Now, as tough as that sounds, the delivery drivers is kind of the simple part. Let's get to that hot button. What about your part-time salespeople, the owner of the company, maybe you're driving personal vehicles and you're off doing some company business. How difficult does that get?
It gets very choppy. And the reason being is the example that I'd given before is when it's titled to your business assets are following that vehicle. So whoever is driving that car represents you. So if you've got vehicles that are personal use and you've got teenage kids and you've got youthful drivers and so forth at home and you're allowing them to drive your business cars, your business is following that. And if you've got partners and let's say your partner has somebody who is out there and they have their drivers, you know, their children driving these vehicles. And let's be honest, children have, I mean, it's statistics don't lie. They have a much higher incident rate.
Yeah.
So you'd much rather have a situation where if it's a personal use vehicle, and it's being driven by, you know, your spouse or it's being driven by your children, title that personally and away from the business because you don't want to be able to attach it. You want to leave a separation in there.
Well, what about the instance now where you've got people using their personal cars for business use? How are they covered? Where does that work?
Yep, the best way to handle that, there's two ways to do this. First off, you're going to want to track and make sure that they're carrying a policy because you want to make sure they're insured. If they're not insured and they're operating under the premise of your business, now, again, this is a legal thing, but you become primary. You've sent that person out. They're acting on your behalf. So if they don't have a personal lines policy in force, their own auto policy, then you're going to be drawn into it. The way to cover that gap is a piece of is a policy called a hired and non-owned liability exposure. You pick up a hired and non-owned liability, and then what happens is if an individual does not have that primary policy in place, then your policy is going to come in and pick up for that. Again, you want to make sure that, you know, the more vehicles that you have hanging out there where people are using their vehicles personally,
you
want to sit down and go through it with them.
Now, the practicality or the reality of this is, let's say I've got a business and I've got a couple of company cars and I've got those insured on a business policy. Chances are that I've probably got that hired and non-owned provision on that policy.
Correct.
And if I, you know, if I don't, we go shoot my insurance agency, I suppose.
Well, don't pick on the insurance agent.
But if we have that,
they may have addressed it with you.
I'm quite certain I have it on mine. But if we have that, then we've covered that instance. As you said, if one of your employees is using their personal car on a business errand of some kind, and they don't happen to have insurance, then we are covered, and that
correct.
Exposure doesn't exist.
Yep. The one you'll hear people talking about quite a bit is that they'll have somebody run an errand for them. And it's not somebody that would normally have access to a vehicle. So you've got, let's say, for example, your receptionist, and your receptionist is going to run something to the bank for you, make a deposit. Mm-hmm. They get into an incident. They don't have personal auto. They don't have their own primary coverage. Your hired and non-owned would step in at that point.
Well, this sounds like it can get pretty sticky. So it sounds to me like all of our business owner listeners better sit down with their insurance agent or Chad and say, okay, here's what I've got and here's what's going on and do I have any gaps in this coverage? But I think we had to move on beyond this, just the auto insurance, except I understand that the auto insurance policy is separate from my business liability insurance policy, but somehow they dovetail together with the limits. How does that work?
Well, they're separate in their limits, but they can dovetail together with an umbrella coverage. You're going to have a separate business a separate auto policy limit, and that's something that again you want to pay attention to, because most people will be carrying you should be carrying at least $1 million limit, and the reason being is that auto is certainly your biggest exposure next to your workers' compensation when you own a company. When you have vehicles out on the road, it's difficult to control the entire environment. If you've got a manufacturing facility, you can implement procedures and policies that can kind of control the workplace environment. But when you're out there, you know, and you're in the real world,
anything goes.
Yeah, and you're commuting to work, there's not a lot you can do about that. So that's something where you want to carry that higher limit so that if something was to happen, and again, your business assets are following that vehicle, and you want to make sure that you've got adequate limits in the event that you do something, some harm or damage to another individual.
Okay, so now we've got the real estate insurance, we've got the auto insurance, we got the business liability insurance, we got the unemployment compensation, we got work compensation. What's this umbrella thing that you're talking about?
Well, an umbrella limit is going to be, it's going to come into place, it's a secondary limit. If something was to happen, and one of those unfortunate events, the situation that I talked about before with the auto when you sent Tommy down to the body shop to pick up the car, when he ran that red light, the damages can easily exceed the $1 million limit that you have. Now what will happen is an umbrella policy will pick up that excess limit. So it'll step in. So instead of having $1 million limit, you now have a $2 million limit. The advantage of an umbrella is it goes over, like an umbrella, it's going to cover multiple lines. So an umbrella can go over your business liability, it can go over your auto, and it can go over your employer's liability. So in the event that one of those triggers the event that you don't have enough underlying coverage for, your umbrella is going to pick that up. So again, where we've seen the primarily where we've seen the umbrella come into place is on auto. It can happen on your business liability, certainly. But auto exposure being the greatest one, you know, and employees out there with their vehicles. And you know, unfortunately, things happen, and those accidents happen to business vehicles just as much as they happen to personal vehicles, and people get hurt. And that's where we see the highest risk, especially for business owners.
So how do we determine the amount of the umbrella? Do we take a look at the revenues and the assets and so forth? And maybe one company needs $1 million umbrella, maybe another company needs $5 million.
And that's exactly right. Yeah, Tom, you're right on the button when it talks about the assets. Take a look at the assets of the corporation and make sure that you've got adequately covered with an umbrella.
So it's a question of how much do you have to protect and what type of exposures might be out there in today's marketplace. $1 million back in 1970 might have been a terrific amount of insurance, where $1 million today probably doesn't get it done anymore. Isn't that right?
That is exactly right. And that's why you need to be doing those quarterly updates and so forth with your insurance agent. One of the things that we see all too often is people that will reduce their coverages on that umbrella. And you really are taking a sacrifice on something like that.
Okay, what other types of insurance should a maturing business owner consider?
Well, one of the things that we haven't addressed that's a very important coverage is business income. We have seen time and time again a business income loss that is, not having business income has put people out of business is probably a better way of putting it.
No income can do that. Yeah.
What business income will do is, in the event of a covered loss, a fire, for example, you're down. And when you're down, your doors are closed. But you still have employees that you need to pay. You're going to be losing customers. You need to offset that so that you can continue to operate as this rebuilding process is going on.
Fixed costs, the mortgage, all those things go
They don't
on.
Go away. Yeah, they don't go away. And you may have an insurance check. So I come in, Tom, and I hand you a check for your property, and I hand you a check for your building. But in the meantime, your doors are closed, and there's no revenue coming in the door. And then, you know, you're going to have to let employees go. The first thing that's going to happen is your customer is going to leave. You know, if your doors are closed, your customer's got to look elsewhere to buy his goods, or vendors have to look elsewhere to buy their goods. So what a business income policy will do is it's going to offset that exposure for you, keep your revenue so that you can keep key employees in place, so you still continue maintain revenue. It can also help you with the extra expense if you need to move across town, open up a new facility, and operate in a temporary place while your others is being rebuilt.
So this is only if you lose the ability to operate.
Yeah, like if there's a fire or something, and and you've got 90 or 120 days to rebuild, you have to set up a temporary facility somewhere. There's some coverage that provides for to help you with those expenses.
That's exactly right. It's business income, and very rarely do you see where this is being done in the industry accurately. They should sit with their CPA, and there's some forms that we're going to put on your website where a person can go out and determined by the industry, get an accurate reading for exactly how much. Because when you go through it, the numbers are staggering. And we've had incidents in the past where everybody thinks about the fire. Everybody thinks about the tornado. And they understand that when that loss comes and there's a total loss, they're going to get a check for the amount of the building. But what they don't think about is now what? And that's where disaster planning and that's where business income comes into play. And people do not pay close enough attention to that. You need to sit down. You need to have a disaster plan in place that's going to implement where would we be operating if everything went tomorrow? Where is our data being backed up? You know, what location could we move to? All of those things are going to help you.
Say I'm an e-commerce company. I do national business. And someone hacks my system and shuts it down, puts in viruses, it implodes.
Yep.
Does that qualify?
Well, you're going to have a separate endorsement on your policy, but there is cyber liability for hacking, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yep, it's unique, and that's something why in this day and age of e-commerce, and as spread as that is, another thing is a security breach.
Right.
So not only you're down, your site's down, you're not taking in revenue online, but maybe you've compromised the integrity of your data, so you may have a security breach. Exactly. Those are things that you can cover.
How long do you have to be down? Is there a time
varies.
Frame?
It varies, yeah, and that's something that you want to read on your policy too, because some will kick in after 24 hours, others will kick in immediately.
One of the choices you make, I'm sure.
That's
okay,
exactly
well, I was
right.
thinking maybe it was like 2 weeks or.
It could be.
But you
help business owners put together this emergency plan and cover it with appropriate coverage if that's necessary.
Yes, we have a disaster plan program that we will walk through with them. Now, of course, it's up to them to implement it and make sure that they have it in place, but everybody needs to pay attention to that because, you know, an example that we had was we had a loss down when Hurricane Katrina. Katrina came into New Orleans. We had an individual, an outfit that had a warehouse down there. And fortunately for them, the flood didn't take them down. The wind did. But the wind caused about $50,000 in damage to their facility, blew the roof off. Civil authority was declared, so they were not allowed to go back and check on their property.
Oh, wow.
So all of the property inside was destroyed, and they were down. I mean, they've been down for months. So the business income loss was about 8 times what the actual property loss was.
Oh,
and had
my.
That not been in place, you know, where are you going to operate? Where are you going to put up a new warehouse? You know, all the major corporations took all the space immediately around them. So they had to keep moving further and further out, which added an additional expense to them. So those are things that you need to be thinking about as a business owner is, okay, that fire hits. Now what are we going to do? Who's got what information? Where are we storing it? How quickly can we get to it? If we need to get up and running, so for example, an insurance office, our exposures are not as great as a manufacturer. A manufacturer may have some specialized equipment that it could take months for them to get that back. Okay, so where are you going to go? Who are you going to get it from? You know, for us, it's a matter of shutting off these and putting on phones someplace
else. This is really hard as an entrepreneur to think in terms of all this protection and all the, you know,
terrific resource to have Chad and them available to help you think about
walk
an emergency
this,
plan.
Yeah,
close that gap in coverage in case something bad happens.
Yeah, because we're always thinking forward. Oh, what if, you know, we have too many sales?
Well, we've got, I think, a couple more types of insurance we want to talk about before we run out of time. One was employee theft you were talking about. And another one was if you've got a huge contract with the big major company, there's some things you can help with that too.
And that's one of the things that we were talking about with the increasing of coverages and the necessity to possibly have to raise your limits. So some of that can be dictated by a contract that you would sign, contractual arrangements with a major corporation. That would be another time where you need to make sure that you're sitting down with your agent. And we can also, we can help and some circumstances. I'm not going to name any of the real big companies that we deal with, but what will happen is sometimes they'll come back to a smaller business owner and say, listen, you need to carry a $20 million umbrella. And all they're doing is distributing a non-invasive product to the store. Well, we can talk with the risk managers and say, okay, do they really need a $20 million umbrella? Is that absolutely a requirement, or is that because of that's just a standard template that you have out to everybody else? So there's some ways to save cost there. If it doesn't seem to make sense, then we can help in those situations. Now, that might be something where, yeah, absolutely, you're distributing you know, pick on the chainsaw manufacturers, chainsaws to a store, something that could have some real harm down the road, and they want a $20 million limit. Well, then what we would do is work with them to make sure that they're satisfying those contracts and help them so they know that before they bid the job or before they go out and bid on that product, let's see how much this is actually going to cost you so you know what your margins are before you go in. That's one of those situations that we talked about where talk to your agent before you make that decision, because you'd hate to make a decision based upon it, sign the contract, find out you're required to carry a $20 million limit, it's going to cost you $30,000 as an example, and next thing you know, you're upside down on the deal.
One of those surprises that you just don't like.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if you're just proactive in it, that's one of those life events that we talked about in the first episode and again earlier today, that whenever you have something that's going to change, whenever you're going to be getting into a larger contract, increase sales, hiring employees, talk to your agent.
So the message here for the big major monster client that every business owner wants to sign up is be careful, walk before you run. Let's take a look at that contract. Let's see what they're requiring. Let's make sure that you've got all of the expense associated with that contract figured into your margins so that at the end of the day, you're still making a profit on this deal.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's one of those things to offset that surprise.
Okay. The last issue we didn't get to very much was employee theft. That's part of your business liability coverage. How does that work?
No, employee theft is actually, that'd be a separate limit.
Separate.
Employee dishonesty, employee theft. It's a situation where internally, maybe you've got a controller. You've kind of seen what's going on in the news right now where not everybody in your office, as you'd like to think, in most circumstances, it's perfectly fine, but you've got a dishonest employee who happens to be skimming.
Well, you hear statistics, 85% of the theft that occurs in companies occurs from the inside.
That's exactly right. They've got access to it, and they know how to do it, and there's a trust factor involved. So what this would do is this would pick up that exposure for you.
So this is a separate one of those items on your laundry list of things to talk about?
Yep, that's exactly right. And also the limit, because in some circumstances with your property, you're going to get a throw-in limit, but it's probably going to be something nominal, $25,000 or something along those lines. Any limits that you see on a policy can be increased, and it's just a starting point. So that's where you want to talk to your agent to say, okay, I see employee dishonesty for $25,000, but we've got millions of dollars running through here. We need to increase this limit.
So here again, it's what potentially could happen and how much exposure could you have, and then you insure to that exposure to the extent you can afford it and set your deductibles accordingly.
That's exactly right. And deal with it industry by industry. Each case is a little unique, and that's why you can't just make the assumption and that the template's going to cover you.
Any last thoughts on business insurance that we haven't covered for a maturing company?
You know, the one thing I'd like to just reiterate is the disaster planning. You would be amazed. I bet the people that are listening right now, if you went back and you took a look at your disaster plan, how weak it really is and how much you've kind of neglected it. And just by going through it, we've seen it happen time and time again where a business goes down and doesn't, you know, it can't make it back. Only because they didn't have the foresight to say, if this goes down, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it and who's in charge of what and do we have enough and who are our key employees that we want to hang on to, and really it only takes a couple of hours to sit down and go through this stuff.
I've
but it's going to save you a lifetime.
Perspective on this now.
Mm-hmm. Those are some terrific thoughts for business owners, and once again, an annual checkup or more often with your insurance agent will probably head off some potential problems that you might not have thought about. Well, this has been a great session and good information for our business owners. I'm Tom Lyons along with my co-host Sam Zordage and our producer Jorgie Jorgensen, and we'd like to thank Chad Nesbitt and the Nesbitt Agency for being with us.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.